Welcome to The Mend, a podcast to learn about services and support for victims and survivors of crime, sponsored through the Center for Crime Victim Services here in Vermont. My name is Anna Nassett, and I'm your host of this show. And today on the show, we have Lauren Monaco Eddings here from the Burlington Community Justice Center. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks so much for being here. Yes. This show was created to take a deeper look at services, organizations, and concepts for victims and survivors of crime. We want to acknowledge the healing process and provide resources, not only here in our state of Vermont, but throughout the country, that could benefit victims of crime as they begin to mend. Today, we're going to be looking at community response and issues around community justice and restorative justice. This is a show where we can all learn, myself included. We may not always agree with everything we hear, but that's what we're here to do, is learn, and I invite you to join me in doing so. I always like to begin with a content warning. Our goal is to create a safe place to discuss topics, but with that in mind, we may have stories or conversations that discuss mental health, are related to crime, or have other sensitive subject matter. So please listen at your own discretion. As I said, today we have Lauren Monaco Eddings, who is a community organizer and restorative justice practitioner motivated by community-based approaches to public safety, healing, and justice. Through her role at the Burlington Community Justice Center, Lauren has been doing restorative work with the community for the last 3 years. In her role at the Burlington CJC, she works with individuals both responsible and impacted by crime whose criminal legal cases are diverted from the court system and recommended for the restorative process. Lauren is especially interested in working with people who have been who have caused or been impacted by intimate partner and or family violence, as well as substance misuse. Lauren also co-chairs the Parallel Justice Commission alongside her colleague Hannah Brislin and helps coordinate the Chittenden Alliance Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. Systems Change and Healing Integrational Cycles of Violence is her life's work. She is also the recipient of the CCVS Community Engagement Award for 2024. So yeah. Congratulations and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Anna.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm excited to really just talk about one of my favorite topics, which is community justice and organizing and survivor work. So
yeah.
It's a pleasure.
It's always fun when people are like, oh, I love talking about this. Like, really? I'm like, I don't know what to say.
I wish we didn't have to talk about it. And here we are. So we might as well.
We might as well really be passionate about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's important.
It is. And I think you can find joy in the dark topics as you work on them and see little changes and things of that nature. So
we have to.
How did you become interested in this field of community justice?
Yeah. I think when I think about this question, I think it all starts with community organizing work that I started to do when I was in college. I was like one of those people that was super involved in student-led organizing and community organizing. And I was with the Civil Liberties and Public Policy at Hampshire College for a long time, and it was all about reproductive justice and about prison abolition and about reimagining a new world for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that meant also taking a really critical look at the systems that we had and then trying to think about how do we both hold those systems accountable while also trying to build something different. And I've just been doing that for 10 years, starting there. And then I did some work in a children's behavioral health center, working with children impacted largely by family violence and substance misuse. And I loved that work so deeply. I couldn't believe how easy it felt for me to work with children impacted by really serious harm. But what I would always say is that, you know, children and young people, they're not cynical. And so I think that was amazing for me. And then took a break from working altogether and then got hungry for it again and literally made a list of different places I was interested in. And I was like, I want to work in government. I want to do systems change. I have always been really passionate about criminal justice reform. And I thought Burlington, Vermont seems like a great place. And I Googled Burlington, Vermont government jobs and found this job at the Burlington Community Justice Center and couldn't believe it when I first saw it because I was like, did this come from?
Amazing.
And I've been in this job for 3 years and I never thought I would say this about a job of like, I'm really happy to be here and I don't have any plans of leaving because I'm able to do exactly what I want to do. So
Well, that speaks a lot to that organization as well.
Yes.
As I know your leader, Rachel, who is just wonderful and have had the privilege of working with her on your website and different pieces. I really have enjoyed getting to know that organization and the people there.
Rachel Jolly is an amazing leader. And I think, you know, she is very thoughtful about supporting her employees and making it feel like, I mean, Rachel's just so community-based naturally in her own family life and in her own community life, and brings that to the work and lets, and has a lot of trust in the people that, you know, work at that organization. And she really believes in us and believes in the mission. And then in that sense is like, just keep me in the loop on what you're doing. But other than that, you know, like, set the world on fire.
She's very empowering.
Yeah.
In a very quiet, humble, steady way
she's
that I appreciate.
She's funny, too. She's really funny. Yeah. She's dry.
And I think, you know, we'll have to send this to Rachel.
I know.
Rachel, here's your love fest.
She's gonna...
Well, I look back because for those of you who don't know, I also do some graphic design, like trauma-informed graphic design for agencies, and I did the Burlington Community Justice Center website.
That's right.
And I look back on, I think she was the first person to bring me in and to do that work when I started my business. And I look back on that and think she could have gone with somebody else, but she chose to hire a survivor. And I think that's really says something, you know, we push for more of that. Like, if you want to work with victims and survivors, hire us as well, bring us into the room. And I credit her with that. And then I've done other websites for community justice centers since then. And that's a lot of how I've learned about restorative justice and community justice was through designing these websites, which is cool. Because I'm like,
I bet.
I've got all the, like, the definitions and the things and the programs.
Maybe
and I'm
you
learning.
Even know it better than I do.
Like, so it was really fascinating to learn through that lens. But yeah, can you share with the audience what the center does? And I mean, it's a big question because I know you have a lot of different programs, but just kind of an overview of what the center does for people to understand a little bit better of what restorative justice can look like in its different programs.
Yeah. I think restorative justice can look, this is not helpful, but it can look like so many different things. And I think part of a meaningful restorative process, to say the least, is informed by everybody who's involved in that process. And it can happen in a lot of different contexts. And there's so many intercept points in the criminal legal system. There's just so many. And at every single one of those points, people need support, especially survivors. And a lot of the times, people that are there responsible for that harm are also survivors themselves.
Right.
And so the Burlington Community Justice Center and CJCs all across the state have a lot of different programs to respond to these different intercept points. And that even starts with the Burlington CJC. We have something called the Conflict Assistance Program, which is run by Barbara Shaw Dorso, who used to be my supervisor when she was the victim services manager with us. So really comes to that work with a lot of experience doing community mediation and also victim services work, which is perfect for a position like that. And so Barb works with community members that are not, you know, there's no police report, there's no... well, sometimes there could be a little bit of court involvement, but largely she works with neighbors and people that are impacted by another person to the point where they need some assistance in having a hard conversation.
Right.
I like to think that a lot of restorative work is helping people have hard conversations. So we could look, that's like the very, you know, before any sort of criminal legal involvement, there's that. And then there's something like pre-charge, there's direct referrals from the Burlington Police Department where they know that a crime has occurred and they know that it's eligible for a restorative process, so they don't even send that to the state's attorney. Then, of course, when things get to court, there's just a lot of different points in there where restorative work can happen. It can happen in diversion, so that's, you know, the prosecutor is saying, we are going to defer prosecution, or, I mean, well, it's said that you have a choice, prosecutorial route or a diversion route. It doesn't really feel like a choice all the times, but I think at least in Chittenden County with the state's attorney's office in Burlington, you know, they're very aware of that, and it's awesome working with them.
That's great.
And so there's that. And then there's post-adjudication. There's post, you know, the court found you guilty of something. A lot of the times it's not necessarily what, you know, the original charge was, especially with cases like sexual assault. And then part of the responsible person's probation is to participate in a restorative process. And then there's, as you know, circles of support and accountability. And this is for folks that are in their reentry process. And so they are, a lot of the times they've been incarcerated for several years. And this is part of really trying to support them with as meaningful and as safe as a transition into the community that they have not known for a long time.
Right.
And I think that the circles of support and accountability as a restorative practice, and also the model that we use in Vermont, is maybe one of the most community-based approaches to public safety that that we offer currently. And so, yeah, I hope I did an okay job kind of
covering. It's a great overview.
There's a lot, and, you know, there's the Parallel Justice Program, too, which is one of the programs that I do, and I do that program with Hannah Brislin, who's also the co-chair of the commission with me, and I love the Parallel Justice Program because the Parallel Justice Program, we can support victims and survivors of crime and harm regardless of whether they go to the police. So we can support them. And there's a lot of people in our communities that for a lot of different reasons are not going to the police for support.
Yep.
We in sort of acknowledging that that is absolutely true, we have to respond to that and give people options. And of course, we also support people who are using the criminal legal system for support. And we like to say that we can be there every step of the way. And the type of support that we offer ranges from emotional support, listening, safety and care planning, to attending RFA hearings. Hannah Brislin largely does a lot of that work in particular. And just being there, you know. And the other day I was like, this is so funny because people are like, what do you do for work? What's your job? And I'm like, well, okay, so what is like a typical day?
How much time do you have?
Exactly. And I'm like, let me just, like, the other day I went to a family law office to support a single mom who's dealing with a lot of trouble from her ex-husband around him paying child support. And then a few hours later, you know, I'm on the phone with a 17-year-old just chatting and seeing how things are going because it's been a really, really hard year. And then, yeah, and it's just, I think that that's just to say, and especially with having Rachel's leadership, it's like, well, where you know you're supporting somebody who's been impacted by crime or harm, that's where we can show up and sort of figure out what people need and go from there. So there's no one-size-fits-all approach, that's for sure.
Well, I think that's, you know, when we think about justice as a whole, like, people think of it as like, okay, you go to court, you get a conviction, they get the maximum sentence, this and that. And I mean, as somebody whose offender did get the maximum sentence, I can still say, like, does that fully feel like justice? No. I mean, it is the ultimate form of justice by our country's standards. But what I like about restorative justice is that it really starts to identify that justice is so personal to the individual. And sometimes it's just being heard. It's having that check-in. It can look a myriad of different ways. And that, you know, over the years, as restorative justice has grown, it's really reimagining that. And I think that's so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, am I happy with the sentence? Yes, absolutely. Let me not be wrong. It was a great day. Continues to be. But, you know, you're still, like, it's hard to really celebrate that moment, whatever it might be, because it's like, what is justice? And, like, how do you really come to that place of healing? And I think that by offering so many different ways of looking at it, you all are really helping victims and survivors move to that point of their own personal justice, which is tied so much to healing, for me at least.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I think that that's exactly right. And I think it can be hard, too, because we are, as you said, you know, we're so in our social collective imagination because of like Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, and all these different cop shows, you know, there's this like, okay, so there's so many ideas that are projected. And you know what? If life really were like some of those shows in the way of, well, you know, there's a lot of crime, don't love that, but an effective, hands-on approach by people.
It's all buttoned up in an hour.
I mean, it was just, yeah, like, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not the world in which we live. And being able to meet with people and also let them know that they have options is a lot of the time surprising because mm-hmm. that's also not, you know, standard, normalized. That's not a service that we really offer in a lot of places in the country. Like, victim services work, as you know, is just grossly underfunded.
Yep.
You know, and I have a lot of respect for people who do the work, especially our Department of Corrections victim services specialists and our state's attorney's office victim advocates, who are just so often the bearer of bad news for people in the community. And I think, you know, it's pretty amazing to me what I, 3 years ago when I started to do this work, and then now where I can really see that it's amazing how much of an impact saying that you are sorry that something happened and you're validating an experience.
Yep.
It's incredible to me because sometimes that's almost enough. Sometimes that's, you know.
Yeah. When we just start by believing.
Like,
that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And having, mm-hmm. you know, when I think of justice, I think of it as the people that believed me and supported me along
yeah.
the way. It really was that, like what you're saying. It's like those people, even if they had to deliver bad news,
yeah.
I knew that they felt bad about it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry I have to share this with you, but here's where we're at. And having yeah. that connection yeah. is such a different piece. Mm-hmm. It's the piece that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, so thank you for doing that.
Yes.
So I kind of, I mean, it does, so your role is restorative process specialist.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like? I mean, you shared a little bit of like your day-to-day can be so different,
yeah.
but what does that look like and how is that different from a traditional victim advocate?
Yeah. So let's see. I primarily work. You could think that we sort of have two divisions at the Burlington CJC, which is our youth division and our adult division, right? So in terms of referrals that we receive from the police department, state's attorney's office, Department of Corrections, wherever they come from, they're going to go either to the youth division or the adult division. And I largely work within the youth division, and that is a little bit different work in the sense that we have different statute around juvenile offenders or
mm-hmm.
juvenile young people that are responsible for harm and crime. And I am the victim liaison. That's a restorative term for this division, the youth division. And that means that whenever we get a case from wherever it comes from, if there's an identified victim, if my supervisor and our youth programs manager, Kelly Ahrens, who's also one of those people that we could talk about for 30 minutes because she's so amazing, she might take a look and think, oh, okay, so, you know, it wasn't indicated that there was a victim, but there's community impact here. And let's see if we can get contact information to reach out and for me to reach out and for me to see how they're doing, what they need, and if they want to participate in a restorative process.
Right.
So I am working with victims of crime. I'm working with survivors of dating violence, teen survivors of dating mm-hmm. violence largely, being the youth division that we are. And I am also having to connect with families too in that sense. And that means, you know, my first call is just to introduce myself and to let them know where the case is at. And sometimes they don't always know that. Giving them information about the person who's responsible's process, what that's going to mean for them, but largely for me to say that I'm really sorry about everything that has happened and that I am there to support the victim, the survivor, and also the family in some ways, any way that I can, whether that's meeting. I like to really offer a lot of different opportunities for engagement, right? So, you know, I've driven pretty far out to like meet with survivors outside of their homes on a nice day and just talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's just we can just talk it through, see if any kind of participation would feel meaningful as well as safe for you. What's really hard about this job, in the sense that we are getting referrals from the state's attorney's office, for example, is sometimes it's a year and a half after something has happened. And because it's really hard for survivors to find support right away and all the way through, especially our low-income survivors, our marginalized survivors, survivors of color. And what I find is that then when it comes to us and to my attention, what I see almost always is a re-victimization by the criminal legal system. And so it's hard. It takes time to really get to what happened, because we have to kind of parse the response and the feeling of, well, justice has not, you know, I was not believed, this was a sexual assault, and then it, you know, was charged as a simple assault. It's really hard. It's really, and so I just try, I think I've done a good job. I mean, it's funny, I'm talking so much now, but I think I've done the best job when I'm working with survivors, when I am not talking very much, right? And I'm just sort of listening. And so it can look like a lot of different things. I think a lot of people really think of restorative justice. The first thing they think of is like coming together with the person responsible. And that's not always the case.
Right.
It's pretty infrequently the case, I would say. And a lot of it can be working with me to think about, to identify impact, and also to figure out if there's a way to make things as right as possible. You know, what do you need from this? Maybe it's being heard from me. Maybe there was somebody at your school, like the principal, who you went to when this first happened, and the principal minimized you and made you feel not believed. Well, maybe that feels like a safer conversation or a safer way to talk about impact than meeting with the person who harmed you, right?
Yes.
And so there's a lot of different things, and that's why, you know, there's no right protocol, because it just depends on the stories that we hear, which are not always the stories that we're seeing in an affidavit, for example.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is, I mean, it is so challenging, because it's like you have this point where it's like, you know, a year later you're contacting them. They've already gone through this. Mm-hmm. They've already been re-victimized, and you have to come in and do that again. I mean, it's a really, really challenging role.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that is really important is when you can look at the affidavit and see that there might be a different story.
Yep.
And my next episode is with Alex, Dr. Alex, who you had on. And so without going into her story at all, if you could share just a little bit about your reflections on kind of that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That process brought home the point that we always have to be critical of everything that we're seeing when it comes from anywhere in the criminal legal system. And also, we need to do things differently. And we need to just do it. And not wait for permission to do that. And I think, so Becky Penberthy, who is our adult restorative services and volunteer manager at the Burlington CJC, another reason why I love working for the Burlington CJC and just love the work that I do, is because I work with people, and like Becky in this case, who look at things and they're just like, no. You know, I'm going to call someone and I'm going to ask some questions, and then I'm going to call that person and I'm just going to do my own research here to get a full picture. And of course that includes having a conversation with the person who we feel like there's another story, and it might be a really big story that we're not seeing there. And so inviting that person in to talk with Becky or another, you know, restorative case coordinator, as well as a victim services specialist, as well as somebody who does a lot of victim services work. Like, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. And then the two of us together having that conversation, which is to say, we're reading this case in which you are named as a responsible person. We have somebody here from victim services, because we're also seeing that there's some victimization that you have experienced as well. And we want an opportunity, a safe opportunity, where you can feel supported in telling us what really happened.
Yeah.
And that will help us figure out what we're going to do about this other case.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. it was interesting. As I said, the next episode is with Dr. Alex. We'll share some of her story. But I think as I learned about that case, just watching that, how it shifted and really beautifully so, if you can say beautiful in a situation like that. Mm-hmm. But I also want to say, like, when it comes to restorative justice work, the way that you, like, take the time to name every one of your colleagues is not something that people normally do on here. And I think that really speaks to what community justice, restorative justice is that, you know, that community aspect where you're naming all of these different people you work with is really, really cool. So I just wanted to, like, acknowledge that because I think it says so much about how these systems can work.
I really appreciate that, too, because I think what also is happening and the reason why it's such a good team is because there's that affirmation, right? And that's doing good healing and justice work is that validation and affirmation and support. And I think when you have, and a lot of us have these ambitions to really change things, right? And so when you're working with people who want to do that work with you, I mean, that just further elevates, you know, your own mission. And we're so collaborative and intentional. And I also just couldn't do it without mentors. And I think that that's also a restorative practice and idea is that we're really ideally including a community response and community members in that circle, and especially, you know, elders and just anybody who's been impacted. That's like, that's the true restorative work. Yeah.
And when you're all affirming and empowering one another, you're going to do that for the victims and survivors you're working with. Like, it just, it starts, like, it just shows how that comes down and then works with everybody. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. So I thought it was really worth acknowledging. So how would you like to see things shift and change within this work to, you know, broaden this to more so than just the CJCs, like for victims and survivors, to give them more voice? And what are some of the new things you're going to be working on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love if we could pay people for their time. I would love it if we could not only create options for survivors and victims to participate in making systemic change or being a part of this process or being in circle with us, right? But I would love to see, you know, I think it's like on the one hand, community response is grassroots. It comes from the community. It's not coming, it's not DOC funded.
Right.
And then on the other hand, we, I think, living in, I mean, everything feels really precarious right now. And it's really, and I never thought I would, I'm trying not to be someone who wants to, like, reference the pandemic too much, but I think that there is, like, a really big social impact from that where a lot of people feel like they just don't want to be inconvenienced. And so I would love if, you know, a community-based approach to public safety model is where people in the community, you know, not people with social work degrees, not lawyers, not, you know, police, but people from the community doing whatever they do. Maybe they do stained glass. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe there's pharmacists, nurse, whomever, teachers who are like, this is my community and I care and I want the story and I want to show up. And I think, as I said earlier, true restorative work involves a community response.
Yep.
And I think that's also complicated because we're also working with populations that have experienced incredible trauma, interpersonal trauma, family trauma, systemic trauma, right? Largely, yep. It starts with that. And so in that sense, it's, you know, wanting the community voice and the community support, and then also it's to show up in a space like that, it's not, it takes a lot. And it also, I think, when you don't have the training or that pre-work and these conversations about systems harm and about how what harm looks like, you can also cause more harm in those spaces. So it's that sort of wanting the community voice and then also wanting to support the community with the tools that they need so they can show up, you know, in a meaningful, safe way with their neighbors,
right.
Instead of maybe calling the police. That's the world I would love to see, is people having the tools that they need so that they can respond to things, you know, within their own communities.
Yeah. And for communities to take the time to learn.
Yes.
Like we did that listening session during mm-hmm. National Crime Victims Rights Week, which yep. we had a good turnout for.
Yeah.
But I think pretty much everybody was already working in this field that
yeah.
was there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so it's that thing, too, of like if you hear of an opportunity in your community to go yeah. listen or support yeah. or, you know, be on a restorative justice panel, yeah. like there's so many different ways to get engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I think it's really we have to have you all with us.
Yeah.
We need the community
to do
this. We just
got to show
work.
Up, you
just
know?
Show up,
like,
please.
Honestly, sometimes the hardest thing is just showing up. And then people get there and they're like, these last 45 minutes, you know, in circle, I want to talk about it. I want to do more.
Yeah.
Because it's connection and yeah. it's relationships. And these are things that foundationally everybody needs and everybody knows how to do in mm-hmm. their own way.
Because these practices can go into your day-to-day life, too. Like, it's not just about a crime being committed and accountability and justice within that, but it's also just how are we having conversations with our partners,
yeah.
with our kids,
yeah.
whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And so learning
yeah.
about these principles yeah. really shapes a safer society.
Absolutely. And a lot of the skills that we try to bring to the work and how we're working with survivors and how we're working with people responsible is all around, you know, accountability. So that's naming impact. That's having the tools, the language, the support, the empowerment, the community, so that you feel like, so that's like just these skills that we think people are just good at that we are just not good at. And it's, I always like to think, you know, we're asking people, whether that's a survivor, to talk about how they've been impacted, to talk about what they need, a person responsible, rising to the occasion to look that person in the eye or just be there and listen. These are incredibly difficult things to do.
Yeah.
And they're also, I mean, that is just like the hero's journey is being able to do those things. And, you know, I don't think because so many of us just don't know how to do them, to say the least, you know, like it's not prioritized in school. It's not, you know, however it is, the modeling just isn't quite there.
Yeah.
And so I like to think, you know, it's there's a lot of that validation of like, yeah, this feels really scary because, you know, it's really new for you and it's really different for you.
Completely different model
yeah,
of anything.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
yeah.
Like you're feeling really vulnerable. I see that and I understand that and I get that. And
yeah.
we have as much time, ideally as much time as we need, especially with the survivor. It's like, you know, I am still working with some survivors who's, you know, the case with the person responsible closed however many months ago, but I'm still meeting with them to just, how's it going? You know, how does this feel? And revisiting that conversation each time of, just so you know, like this, you're not required to meet with me. You know, I'm mm-hmm. just, I, you know, there's a relationship there and I know you're still navigating this impact and it feels helpful for you to connect with me. And so I'm happy to do that. And that's just like thinking about a strong network where people have somebody that they can go to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we need that.
Mm-hmm.
We absolutely need
that. And
I mean, I don't care if maybe you've gone out and told your story 100 times or
yeah.
500-600 times. You still need that.
Yeah.
Just speaking from my own personal transparent experience
yeah.
of like,
mm-hmm.
it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So speaking about something is very different than having to like live through it in some regards.
And that's really big and important too. And I think it's vital to be clear that in my work with survivors, I let them know at the very beginning, I'm not here, you know, I don't need you to tell me what happened.
Yep.
I don't need you to. If it feels helpful for you to do that, of course you can do that. And we can talk about what that could look like, because maybe if you want to talk to me about what happened, maybe it would feel really good for you to have somebody there with you,
mm-hmm.
right? Maybe it would be really good for you, for us to talk about, you know, how can I pick up on something with what you're sharing so that I can, you know, maybe we need to pause at any point. And we just don't know, we don't know people. And we need mm-hmm. to ask them questions. And we have to ask them how they want to be supported. of course, a lot of people, especially survivors, don't know how they want to be supported because they're coming from a context of feeling usually really disempowered.
Yeah.
And so that's like, here are some ways, you know, and what feels good for you. And so there's just so much, even so much pre-work, prep work, and just relationship building.
I always say, I'm like, you know, any choice you can give a victim survivor is like the biggest thing, because you're in a situation where you feel like you have no choice or voice.
Yeah.
And I reference Amy Farr a lot. And like the first time I met with her, she pointed to like all the court documents. And she's like, what do you want me to call him?
Love
like
it.
It was like, no one had ever asked me that. Yeah. Right? Such a simple thing, but it still stands out so hugely to me.
It's a bunch of simple things.
Yes.
It's a bunch of little, it's like,
what color pen do you want? Like, I mean, literally that small of a thing makes a difference.
Yeah.
Because it makes me feel like I'm supported, I'm believed, I have a choice.
Agency,
all of that.
Mm-hmm. And being respected and being like, this is your story. It's not my story. It's not this other person's story.
Yeah.
So you know it best.
Really centering to be in the table, at the table, in the circle, like understanding that you're part of your own team versus you're just over here, the victim, waiting to hear what people are deciding for your life.
It's, I think, one of my like all-time favorite things about my job and just in life, in community, relationship, anything, like seeing people come back to themselves in a lot of way. And maybe they come back to themselves and they just have, you know, less doubt about their boundaries and about how they want to be. And being able to see that, especially with young people, is, I mean, yeah, it's just the stuff of life to meet with someone who has really gone through it, right? And a lot of it is like meeting with somebody after they've just gone through maybe the worst day of their lives. And then, you know, through just relationship building and showing up and these like simple little things, right? And that's where it's like anybody can do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to see, you know, that like the confidence and the this is what I think and this is what I want to do. Oh, yeah, this person did that, but it didn't bother me and I'm just going to keep it pushing. I'm going to keep it moving. It's like, you know, it's, yeah. It doesn't always look like that, and there's no right way to heal or anything, and it can be a lot of different things. And like you said, giving people options and seeing that people, there's no one size fits all, and people are, and that's where, you know, you just gotta listen and be there and let them kind of steer where you go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard when people are like, what do you do for work? Because you're like, well, it depends.
I don't know. Someone recently, like, what does your day look like? I'm like, I don't even get me started. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
And then it's like, I don't really want to talk about this right now. Like, I need.
Well, and I think on that side, as somebody who's working in these places, it's, you know, the support that we need of finding community, finding our own group of friends that are really, even if they don't understand the work, like, you know, I just think of that for myself, of like the people in my life, such different occupations, but that there's like such a like love and respect for what each individual does.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what makes it really empowering on my end to keep doing this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So,
and it's like, people who do all sorts of different professions that maybe they haven't experienced any kind of trauma. The work that they do is not about trauma, but they're still your really good friend and they listen, you know? So it's like, we can all do it and we need each other as part of this project, this feminist project.
Absolutely. Yes, we do. So I will be winding down now because this is so good. I feel like we could talk for hours.
We will.
But for those of folks who want to learn more about the work of the Burlington Community Justice Center and really just restorative and community justice as a whole, I mean, obviously I'm biased because I designed their website, but I do think
you know
like
everything about it.
Content wise, like I just when they you all were providing me the content, like there's a whole glossary of terms on there. Like it's really. Like Rachel did an incredible job of getting me the content to create that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really great resource, burlingtoncjc.org, to learn not only about what y'all are doing, but this whole movement. So Start there and find your way around the restorative justice world.
And have fun, and most importantly.
Have fun. So I always like to close on a positive message, just a sentence or two that you would say to victims and survivors who might be listening today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry about what happened, and I believe you. And sometimes unfortunately, you have to keep asking around for more. You have to keep asking and pushing. And I want to get to a place where we have, you know, where people in these organizations are all able to be there and fight for you and look at a story and see a different story. And that's not always going to be everybody there. But that doesn't mean that you can't get there. And yeah, my door is open as well at the Burlington CJC anytime. Give me a call.
Love it. Yeah. Thank you. Thank You're you welcome. So much for being here, Lauren.
Yeah, thank you, Anna.
Yes, and for everyone listening, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, Anna at standupresources.com. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Mend. Be well, and we'll see you soon.